Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle. www.serotalk.com, a production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 132 for November 12th, 2012. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Lisa Salinger.
And I'm Buddy Brannon.
And we are back once again for yet another round of news and musings and thoughts and who knows what. So, starting out this week, we just love talking about security and privacy and things going down and the internet not working. You know, because it doesn't happen very often, right, buddy, that the internet would ever crash.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And then what internet are you on?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. You want my ISP, don't you?
Exactly.
You know, it's really funny because, you know, even as you know, like 15 years ago or whatever, actually maybe even more than that, when the internet first started going more commercial, I would say, you know, the internet was never designed for this. It really is just held together with chewing gum and baling wire. And now it really is.
So in Indonesia, they kind of decided to like block access to Google, and it took Google down for 30 minutes.
They decided we can't have Google, nobody else can have Google either.
Exactly.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, so I guess I didn't really think about routing messages and all that good stuff, things I really don't understand, but it's basically all kind of based on trust. We kind of assume that everyone's going to play nice on the internet and not block one another. And so when that happens, bad things occur.
Yeah.
And it took a little while for them to realize what was going on and to...
It would have taken longer if some guy somewhere didn't have connections.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
This guy says, oh, hey, this isn't supposed to be happening. Maybe I should call my buddy over there at Nortel.
Yeah.
And so he called his buddy and they kind of said, oops, and fixed it, and everything was happy again. But it could have taken much longer had that not happened.
Absolutely. Right.
So in case you've been like in a cave or on another planet this past week, we did have a presidential election. And
we did?
We did, actually. We did.
Really?
And so I haven't gotten a single robocall since Tuesday, and I am just really happy.
I'm feeling a little more positive about TV. No kidding.
I don't really care who won or lost. I'm just glad we're done with the political ads for a while.
Yeah. Thank God it's over. Now we got four more years of Gretchen.
The next morning I saw a tweet which I retweeted. It was 1,457 days to the next election. Just in case you cared. Anyway. No, but awesome. The reason it's important today in context of our podcast is that one of the things that President Obama is going to need to deal with, unfortunately, is piracy and privacy concerns. We thought the whole SOPA thing went away. Well,
SOPA
PIPA.
Oh, I want some SOPA PIPAs.
Oh, those are good, man.
Yeah.
Those are delicious.
They are.
With big old bowl of chili. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, I get it. I get that people do download a lot of stuff illegally. I know what happens. I just hate the thoughts of a lot of regulation of the internet.
Yeah, and it can really turn into sort of killing a fly with a hand grenade or something. Mm. There are two books written by Cory Doctorow. They're fiction. They're fiction of sort of a very possible near future geared toward young adults, available free for electronic download, or you can buy them in either DebtTree or... unprotected non-DRM'd audio.
Yeah.
So not from Audible. Audible won't sell them because they won't do that. One's called Little Brother came out in 2008 or 9, I forget. Anyway, and it really addresses the whole internet privacy and it revolves around a kid that accidentally gets nabbed by Homeland Security. The other one just came out about a couple, 3 weeks ago, and it's called Pirate Cinema. Pirate Cinema is about a kid who started out by downloading movie clips that he would then mix together in interesting new ways. And so he'd download these clips and he'd ran afoul of the copyright police and got his family taken off the internet for a year, which really caused all sorts of problems. And so he...
Oh, wow.
Anyway, Pirate Cinema is, that's the latest one. It's fantastic. And while it's geared towards sort of the young adult audience, it's really recommended reading for anybody. It's just, it's good stuff. And not too implausible. And well, and there's certainly a bias in it because all the people who are wanting to protect copyright with all these laws and so forth are evil, mean, bad people. But be that as it may, I think there's quite a bit accurate there, actually. Laws being bought and sold and that sort of thing. Right. So,
look at the jobs it would create, though.
Yeah,
I'll make sure that we get a link.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll have this whole infrastructure of internet bureaucrats. Talk about job creation, but also really just chaos. I mean,
yeah, you thought being an IRS agent was kind of a bad job that made people universally hate you.
Wow. You know, you mentioned Audible. I went to sign in the other day. I hadn't signed in for a while. And apparently Audible and Amazon have partnered up or something because I could
Audible has been owned by Amazon for years, and they're just now getting around to integrating everything.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Gotcha. Because you can either sign in with your Amazon account, which I kind of accidentally did, and then and it said you don't have an account and zero credits. It's like, whoa, what's up? So then I went back and checked, and you can still use your old username. Yeah.
They really want you to link things, though. And if you don't soon, then they will for you or something.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. Interesting.
You didn't get that email?
Apparently not. I mean, I'm cool with it. I just don't want to lose anything. Yeah. I don't know how Yeah, I'm sure they'll. Okay, I'll have to figure that out. So definitely some things to watch on the privacy and security front. It's not going away, and there is going to be more to come, I'm certain. But in other rather interesting news, Microsoft Surface, speaking of election, was used as a balloting device in one precinct in Virginia.
Yeah, well, they had one of them.
One. You're right. Exactly. One device. We have another article also that's just real close to it, this here. Why you can't vote with your iPhone. And basically, the article is saying it's not that it's technically impossible. It's just psychologically, people aren't really ready for it. Or a lot of people aren't ready for it. Basically, people just are nervous about the legality, but it talks about the fact that when you mail in an absentee ballot, you don't know where that thing is going to end up. You don't know if it's going to end up in a landfill or it's going to go to the right place. So is it really that much more secure the way we've been doing things than the way that we might in the future?
See, I guess people really want a paper trail that they know that the paper can't be altered. Now, of course, paper can be destroyed, but it would be harder to alter it than it would be to twiddle some bits and make things look like they're something that they weren't. For example, look at Patrick making the intro several weeks ago when you weren't here, that where he introduced it with your voice and said, "Welcome to Serotalk 116," and you never said "Welcome to Serotalk 116," but he pieced it together and made it sound like you did.
He certainly did.
I think that's what people are really concerned about: is fraud in the election and fraud in the voter system, where electronic ballots could be compromised with no paper trail. And I think here in Pennsylvania, I don't think, at least in my county, I think our electronic voting machines don't print out. I think it's just an electronic ballot and you're done. There are some voting machines that will print and leave a paper trail like that.
So, Buddy, have you or Lisa actually used an accessible voting machine at any point?
Yes. Cool. Yes. Yeah, we have the iVotronic here, and which is a really dumb name for a machine, but it's touchscreen, but then it has up and down arrow buttons and a big old diamond shaped button for making your selection, and then the vote button is in the top of the machine, which is not great for ergonomics if you've got short arms and are in a wheelchair and can't raise your arms up like my wife. So I had to actually push the button for her because she couldn't reach it.
Wow.
But it works. It's a bit cumbersome just because you've only got an up, a down, and a select, but it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the one that I used was very much like that. I don't know the name of it. My concern about this particular article was a little bit different. I mean, of course, there are security concerns, but my thought was, if you are voting via an iPhone or a Microsoft Surface tablet or some sort of touch device, are you alienating the older population? It's kind of like when voting was not accessible for us. They were leaving off, you know, they were not really making it possible for one demographic to vote without assistance. And I am wondering about the older population, them saying, well, I don't know these things. You know, it's more trouble than it's worth. I'm not going to vote.
I don't necessarily think so. I mean, look at how many people are getting, for example, just the iPad that are older that wouldn't touch a computer, but it's like they can just point at something and say, yeah, I want that thingy. And so I don't think that's as much a concern. Now, if you're talking about older people with failing vision, yeah, I can see that just because touch screens are intimidating and then there's that whole learning curve. But that particular learning curve, I don't think is there for sighted people so much because, like I say, it's just point at the whatever and touch it and it goes.
I'm not even saying that it is a problem for older people, but could it be considered one? Could it be one of those things like, well, this demographic didn't vote, therefore this election was not a fair election?
I mean, my thing is, if you can vote absentee, I mean, I'm thinking of like New Jersey, and I understand why they did this. They allowed people to vote by email. And
I don't like that idea at all.
No, I don't really either. But if they're willing to do that under special circumstances, then surely there can be some sort of online voting method that if we have time to think it through and I don't know.
Yeah, sure. Online somehow, over the phone somehow, email, no. I mean, email, no. No, I don't think email is a great... I mean, it was for one thing, it was never designed with security in mind. Email headers, as everyone knows, can be easily spoofed. Just because, like I say, nobody when the email protocols were designed, this was stuff that nobody really, you know, thought anything of. So it's a pretty insecure protocol. So... word to the wise, don't send your credit card numbers over email. Just don't.
Oh, please. I get quite a few of those.
I'm thinking so high tech, I didn't even think about phone-based voting options. That's an interesting thought, though. I mean, kind of NFB Newsline, we read newspapers over the phone. Right. I don't know why we couldn't vote that way.
A bunch of Serotalks back, I forget when. It must have been sometime 2009, 2010. There was a demonstration of phone-based voting in Australia. So it's something that's being done somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that I have decided is that I've kind of had enough of politics for a while, and I'm ready to read a good book. Now, I chose to use Audible to do that, but Amazon Prime is now being made available for a monthly payment option. You can pay, it has been $79 a year forever, but now first of all, if you could have paid monthly, that would have averaged out to about $6.58 a month. Now, the new price is $7.99 a month, which, you know, that doesn't bother me a whole lot. I get it. If you're going to pay monthly, you're going to pay more. That's just the way it is.
Yeah. I mean, $7.99 a month, that's not bad, especially if you order a couple of things a month. You know, you get the two-day shipping for free.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a nice thing. And I guess if you watch the Amazon streaming video, which is Flash. Then okay.
Some people really like that. I haven't done much with that, but some really like that.
Some people like that. I don't know how accessible it is, but I'll tell you, as somebody who does a lot of online shopping, I don't necessarily mind waiting the extra for, what do they call that, Super Saver shipping?
Yeah.
I don't necessarily mind that. I just figure that waiting is just a part of what you do when you buy things online, but being able to be guaranteed to get things faster, I don't complain about that either. And I'm
right.
You know, and as somebody who's blind and does a lot of online shopping because the four words that I hate to hear most often in the English language when I'm out shopping, we ain't got that.
Yeah.
But have you looked? Oh, wait, there it is.
There's a concept, yeah.
Yeah.
I know that one of the things you can do with Amazon Prime is to read books on the Kindle. And Lisa, you were, along with Allison Hartley, recently on a Tech Doctor podcast. That's Robert Carter's podcast. Dr. Carter does a great job there. And if you have iBlink Radio, you can go to the podcast category, and that is one of the podcasts you can listen to right from iBlink. So I know you don't want to rehash the entire podcast, but why don't you just kind of give us some highlights there, Lisa, a little bit?
Well, we talked about the Kindle and accessibility. At the time that the podcast was recorded, Allison and I had Kindle keyboards, and Dr. Carter didn't, and he was able to borrow one from a friend, and I like to think that maybe we persuaded him just a bit. But we talked about what you could do and what you couldn't do, and also the thought process that went into it. I really felt like I didn't want to support Amazon because they were making these inaccessible Kindles. But really, it got to the point where there's such a variety and such a number of books available on Kindle, and some that I couldn't find anywhere else, that I felt like I wasn't so much making a statement to Amazon anymore as I was shooting myself in the foot.
Mm-hmm.
So I did get the Kindle and like it very much. But the one thing
traitor
kind of, yeah, the one thing that kind of made my inner five-year-old stand up and yell, no fair, was that you can get one free book a month if you have a Prime membership. You can borrow it. You're not actually keeping it on your Kindle, but you can borrow it. But in order to borrow it, you couldn't do it from your computer like you can do most manage your Kindle type functions. You had to borrow it from the Kindle. And I played with various options and thought about it a bunch and got some sighted help and was able to come up with steps that I've used now to borrow two books with Kindle and Prime. And I did write out the instructions, and we have a link to them in the show notes. So if you do have a Kindle and you have Prime, I would encourage you to check it out. It seems like this particular concept of borrowing books from your Kindle is riddled with fine print, because you have to borrow, as I said, from the Kindle. But if you are using the Kindle for PC app or an app on your smartphone, you can't do it. So it's definitely kind of a niche within a niche concept, you know, blind people with the Kindle keyboard, with Amazon Prime, who want to borrow this free book a month. But if it's something that would be helpful to you, I certainly encourage you to check it out.
Has the price on the Kindle keyboard gone down at all? I don't even know what it is right now.
No, they seem to have discontinued the wireless model, which was something like $89 or $99. The current one that's out has wireless and 3G, and that is $139. There's been different speculation. When the wireless was discontinued, I thought, okay, you know, if the wireless is discontinued, can the other model be far behind? So I kind of wonder if the days of having this accessible Kindle, being able to get it, are numbered. But then someone made the point that really it's in Amazon's best interest to keep a Kindle around that is accessible. So I really don't know where that will go and how that will go, but I really like it. I wouldn't recommend it if you're reading a lot of reference books and you need to navigate by elements or find specific things. But if you're reading general, you know, novels and nonfiction, essentially the kinds of things you'd find on Audible, you know, because, for example, you don't find overly technical books there. If you're doing just kind of general reading, it can be a really nice fit.
Excellent. Well, that's a real good overview. And again, I encourage people to go to saratalk.com, go to our blog, and check out the show notes of all the stories that we're discussing this week. But definitely check out Dr. Carter's podcast, and then check out Lisa's resources on the Kindle as well. In Windows 8 news this week, it may be safer, but a lot of people are not buying yet. There was a survey by Avast. 350,000 people were surveyed, and apparently about 8% of them intend to or have upgraded to Windows 8. That's strikes me as a pretty low number, honestly.
It's a low number, but I can't say I'm surprised. I'm not surprised.
Right. No.
I'm not surprised at all. For one thing, people don't like change mm-hmm. at all. And the prevailing wisdom for a long time has been, well, when a new operating system comes out, don't upgrade to it right away, and don't upgrade it for several months at least.
Right.
That's been the prevailing wisdom, continues to be the prevailing wisdom. But I think, you know, even though people know that it's more secure, or believe that it's more secure, and all the press says it's more secure and everything else, technical journalism says that it's more secure.
Mm-hmm.
Familiarity and perceived ease of use, because of familiarity, really trumps security every time.
Right.
Most of what I've been reading hasn't really mentioned security that much. I kind of think if it were put out there more in general tech, or just articles that are kind of out to the public, that more people might. I mean, they might sacrifice a little bit to make the change to switch to the unfamiliar if they thought it would make them more safe. But the main thing I've heard about Windows 8 is new. You know, it's new.
Yeah.
I've also heard
it's confusing because also read that it's more confusing because they're trying to straddle that whole touch versus classic legacy interface and all that sort of thing. I have read that a little bit of the security thing, especially, you know, with antivirus being built in and everything else. But that being said, yeah, it's not as much promoted as much as perhaps it could be. But I think even if it were, well, again, I mean, look at our community. We've still got people that use XP, and granted, some of it's because, like, well, I can't afford to buy a new computer right now. But a lot of it's, I don't want to learn some other new thing. I'm comfortable with this, and this works. And really, I think that attitude isn't just us.
No, agreed. Yeah. Well, in other Microsoft news, Microsoft Office for iOS and Android could be coming as early as next year. This is another one of those, my goodness, I so hope that Microsoft manages to provide accessibility for Office 2013 on other platforms besides Windows. Well,
we hope so. It hasn't been the case for Mac ever.
Nope.
As far as what it's going to look like for iOS and Android, who knows?
Right. And there's going to be an Office 365 subscription tie in there. That, again, that doesn't really surprise me particularly. Yeah. Makes sense. So yeah, just definitely going to be interesting, kind of holding our breath for the release. You know, maybe just the web aspects of Office 365 will be more accessible, you know, if that's the way we have to use it on other devices. I don't know. There's just so much speculation and we just don't know yet. Well, what about the idea of retiring Windows Live Messenger in favor of Skype? Honestly, this one doesn't surprise me either.
Well, no. The only thing that might be a bit of a surprise is that it took this long, because when did Microsoft buy Skype? 2010?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Right.
And really, it's a duplication, right? Because Skype has text chat, voice chat, video chat, Windows Live, same.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what this means for all of our multi-protocol chat clients, and are they just not developing anymore? Are they going to get rid of the service, and so you can't connect to live.com and use your... what, all your MSN Messenger contacts are going to go bye-bye?
Right, that's what I'm wondering too, yeah.
Yeah, that's my impression, because they're talking about retiring the service and it will only be available in China.
And they're wanting
a specific area of China.
Yeah, true.
I didn't get that. That's where we need Paul Harvey and the rest of the story. I'd love to know what's behind that. But it sounds to me like it's not just kind of dying out, like it's not going to be supported. It sounds to me like it's going away completely.
All right,
and they're, again, wanting you to unify accounts. They're wanting you to roll your two accounts into one.
And for me personally, I don't care, because I feel like Windows Live Messenger has already turned into a train wreck from an accessibility standpoint.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the people that I know went to oldversion.com and got an older version of Messenger because it was accessible, and the new just is not. So, you know, I don't really care how they package it as long as it is accessible. And I think it would be nice to be able to separate statuses, like, I'm here for messaging, but don't call me, you know, because I find for myself, I'm not on Skype that much. When I go on Skype, it's to make a call specifically or to be part of a call. When I first got Skype for my iPhone, I didn't realize that I needed to sign out of it. And someone I did not know called me at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, my.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And then someone I did know called me 5:30, and it was like, it's time to sit down and give myself a crash course on Skype in the iPhone. Got that thing turned off.
So do you sign out or do you just unload from App Switcher? What's the better way to do that?
I like the sledgehammer approach, so I do both.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. I haven't played with Skype on the iPhone for a long time, is it? I know for a while there were accessibility concerns, then things got better and then not so better, and where do we stand now?
Briefly, there were accessibility concerns. I find, for myself anyway, overall, that Skype is more accessible on the iPhone than it is on the PC.
Nice.
Also on the Mac. The Mac Skype is very nice, too.
Yeah, I have played with... I don't own a Mac, but I used one for a while, and I'd like to own one someday. Maybe I shall. But yeah, that was one of the experiences I really enjoyed on the Mac was Skype. So if you buy a Windows RT 32-gigabyte tablet... you only get about 16 gigabytes of usable space.
bloat much?
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, everybody knows, especially like on a Windows-based device, not so much on iOS or Android, apparently, but on Windows-based devices, you know, yeah, you're going to have some system files that are going to take up some of your hard drive space, but half of it?
Half is a bit ridiculous. Okay, so...
Talk about a piece of the pie.
Just for perspective, the iPhone, the 32-gig iPhone, has about 28 gig of usable space. So, I mean, that's pretty reasonable, okay? The Android, about the same. I think that you're looking at usually about 2 gig or so worth of OS. Mm-hmm. So, by comparison, Windows RT really is a pig. And my first reaction to seeing this was something like, you know, geez, Microsoft really should have thought this through a bit more, because truth or not, the perception is that Windows is bloated, okay?
Right.
And so you get Windows 8 on this tablet, and this tablet's supposed to be great, but hey, look, half my space is gone. It really is bloated.
Yeah.
Look at it in comparison to other things. They're not so bloated. And again, that's really, up until now, I would say a lot of that was perception, because Mac OS, for example, is quite large. Mm-hmm. There's not really any appreciable size difference between Mac OS and Windows on the desktop. But again, perception is that Windows is bloated and other things aren't, even if they are. But this story is not going to help that perception any.
No, it is not at all.
No.
Talking about perceptions, we have a couple of articles here using Surface. And I think the thing I found about this that I thought was interesting is it is so much, you know, the Surface kind of billed as, man, if you know Windows 8, you know the Surface, and it's all going to be so easy to use. And the problem is the Surface is a tablet, and it's not a desktop PC or a laptop. So if you think you're going to get all of the functionality on this tablet that you are on your PC, you're going to have a rude awakening. You're going to be in for a bit of a shock.
Yeah, well, and then, you know, there have been other stories so far that Windows RT is not Windows, and they're not exactly the same. There are things that work on Windows that don't work on RT and so forth.
Yeah.
So I guess there will be some parallels, and you'll be able to ease into it more, but complete replacement, maybe not.
Right. And of course, the Surface is a new product. Things are going to develop.
And that's the other thing. If you know Windows 8, you know the Surface, but Windows 8, again, all the articles are saying, look, this is a whole new paradigm. This is a whole new experience. You got to basically learn Windows all over again, just like you did with Windows 95, and you haven't had to since. You know Windows 8, you'll know the Surface, but nobody knows Windows 8 yet. It's not intuitive to people yet.
I know that this is really pushing ahead of things, but it will be interesting to me to see the version of Windows that comes out after Windows 8.
Uh-huh.
Because it will either be, I think, it will either be drastically more or less Windows 8-like. I mean, they may go back to something that looks a bit more like Win 7 if 8 never catches on. But if 8 does catch on, they might really tweak this and fix that, and the next OS could be more of the same. I just think it's interesting, at least, to speculate.
Well, it'll probably be like when Windows 7 came out and they said, oh, this is what Vista should have been. So the next one will be like, yeah, this is what Windows 8 should have been.
Yeah.
I feel like this is history repeating itself. Again.
Yeah. So coming up after the break, we have news about some fruit company and AT news and much, much more. So stay tuned.
Are you tired of browsing through thousands of sites just to find the news you want? What about recipes, shopping, radio stations? Wouldn't it be great if there was a single place where you could find all these things and a lot more? There is. Discover Samnet, with the widest and most complete content ever assembled for the blind community. And speaking of community, you can use Samnet's voice chat, instant messaging, and users forums to communicate with family, friends, and others who share your interests. To learn more about Samnet, please visit www.serotech.com. That's www.serotech.com. Or call us toll-free at 866-202-0520. We're Serotech, the accessibility anywhere people.
Welcome back to Serotalk Podcast 132. With news of, as Buddy so eloquently put it, some fruit company. And the
BlackBerry, right?
Black who? This is five reasons why Apple's stock is tanking.
See, these headlines just bug the crap out of me.
Yeah.
That's why I put it in the story order, because I knew you were going to be on this podcast and I knew you were going to have that reaction.
Yeah, well, okay, so, well, aside from the fact that, like, a lot of stock is just dropping, okay, yeah, Apple stock dropped by a lot, and there, sure, there are reasons, but number one, tanking, really?
Okay, yeah. Thank you. Thank you, because I was going to say, I could go for 10 minutes on the word tanking, and what exactly is that? And
well, it's still up over 200% what it was at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah. But during, it's the same thing. It's the whole word nerd thing, because during Sandy, did not have time, but wanted to tweet and say, how exactly does one hunker? And how will hunkering save you? So this tank, when I first saw the title, that was my first thought. Tanking? Seriously?
But the other thing really is, okay, it was up over $700 for a brief shining moment. Did people really think it was going to keep going up? Really?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just ridiculous.
It's all about headlines, sadly.
It is. It's all about headlines and, like, how many people can we get to click through to our article? And how much, like, comment wars can we start and get more people to click through the article? There was one, and in fact, there was a guy that actually had a similar reaction. Come on, tanking, this is just, you know, journalistic. I forget what words he used, but basically, it's like, yeah. He said some stuff that I really agreed with, like that Apple needs to just concentrate on what they do, and that being product-centered and user experience-centered, and not kowtow to basically to what the shareholders and so forth are asking them to do, and they just need to play to their strengths. Absolutely. I think they're changing, and so people don't like change, and so they're reacting to that. I don't think this is going to be a huge problem overall. Again, Apple stock is still up like 100-some-odd% over what it was at the beginning of the year. Tanking, not so much.
Right.
Yeah. And people have so... I'm trying to look for the right word, and it's deserting me. That's some sort of karmic punishment to coin one, or hopefully it's a word and I'm safe. But people have so iconified Apple. Mm-hmm. I mean, sure. They're still saying... Can it be the same? Will it be the same after Steve Jobs is gone?
And Steve Jobs has been gone for over a year.
It's been over a year, and it's going to go in whatever directions it's going to go, and Apple was not specifically Steve Jobs. I mean, it may have looked that way.
And clearly Apple's going to be fine.
Yeah. But people, for some reason, have really, at least it seems to me, they've invested a share of their hearts in Apple like they haven't done in anything else. So I think people will really read stuff like, is Apple ever going to be the same? Or Apple stock tanks, you know, and they take it very seriously.
Well, and then you have the people that love to hate on Apple. I mean, you know, any opportunity they can find to say something negative.
Just like camp.
The friendly rivalry between TripleClick Home and That Android Show, and you can listen to them both by going to their respective websites or on iBlink Radio.
Did you know that if you play the clip of him saying, I'm Joe Steinkamp, backwards, it really says, I hate Apple.
I hate Apple. It does. Do it. Try it. Check it out.
Try this at home.
That's right.
Get your old Library of Congress tape recorder.
Yep,
tape
and
player.
Change your side selector switch and have a good time.
We have an article here that's not an AT article, but in my mind, maybe someday it might could be, talking about how engineers can control streetlights with an iPad. It's coming to London. And I guess my thought was, I've wondered for some time if there would be any way that a blind person could be able to read traffic lights with an iOS device or some other device like that. You know, is there any way you could be aware of when lights changed and that sort of thing? Do you think that's ever going to happen, buddy? You think that's realistic at all?
I guess it could happen. I'm just thinking about somebody, you know, hacking into the traffic light and making a change.
There's that too. So, I don't know.
I kind of like this. Not even so much specifically that it's an iPad, but that the engineer is not making these changes in an office in some cubicle, that he or she can go out and observe the traffic and observe the traffic pattern. Because I think sometimes when these lights get programmed, it's kind of happening in a vacuum, so they're not seeing the real-world uses or the potential pitfalls. And this, to me, seems really great because they're right out there in the environment. They can make changes, and then they can wait, and they can observe, and they can see how the changes that they've made affect traffic patterns.
Hopefully before somebody gets smashed by a truck.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, both for vehicles and for pedestrians.
What is a pedestrian?
I think it's another word for road pizza, last time I looked.
Oh, okay.
Sadly. Yeah, it's one of them. It has 2 feet and sometimes a hat, you know.
In the news of assistive technology this week, we have kind of a big story that almost got tweeted like an afterthought. It's like, oh, by the way, we forgot to mention this, but the Braille, what does BANA stand for?
Braille Authority of North America.
Thank you. The Braille Authority of North America adopts the Unified English Braille Code. Happened the 1st of November.
Which, if you read the article further, makes it sound like a total misnomer. But anyway.
Yeah. Everything except Nemeth Math and Science was adopted.
And music.
Yeah. So parts of the code.
So basically, it's unified except that it isn't.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Although, to be fair, I don't know how they would get math and science symbols into a unified code and still keep the 6-dot cell. So yeah. I don't really see a way around that.
So we've got some unified fragments, sort of.
Yeah. I mean, so like unified Braille can do some limited, very limited things with the math and science and whatnot. But for very complex things, I really think that we still need another code like Nemeth. And so I'm glad that's still around. The big deal about this is that it's going to make it easier for computer translators to translate and to back translate than what we have currently. And like it said, they're going to add a couple of abbreviations, get rid of a couple abbreviations, change some of the rules around to use abbreviations differently, although they should still be readable. And I think, didn't they say some punctuation was going to change? It's probably going to be something obscure.
I actually set my Braille table on my Braille note to UEB this week and have just been reading in it exclusively to just kind of see what it's like. Reading is not a problem. Things like instead of using, like if you had the number like 1.1, you know, instead of having a dots 4.6 for the decimal point, we're using period now. So one period one, things like that. Getting rid of the BLE sign dots 3, 4, 5, 6. So tablet is all spelled out. When you read it, it's not hard to read. I mean, you recognize it's different. You say, oh, wow, that's different. Writing in it is going to take some getting used to. That's going to be interesting.
Yeah, when these young kids start learning unified Braille and then they get a Braille note from one of us old farts with BLEs and stuff in it, they're not going to know what to do with that. Well, I guess it'll be sort of like people reading grade 3. I don't know.
Yeah. One thing that's missing that I haven't decided if I like or not is the computer Braille code is gone.
Oh, is it?
I liked the computer Braille code personally, but
it appears
to be gone at this point.
Is it gone, or has it sort of been assimilated into?
I mean, it's like http://, the colon is the colon, whether it's like you use number signs and you use contractions. At least that's how I'm seeing it on my Braille note. Now, I really would like to get a manual of, you know, to make sure that I'm not seeing translations errors, because that can happen sometimes.
I think I did see a link to a Braille manual. I think it's like 4 volumes.
You sent me something. I don't know if that's what you sent me a long time ago or not.
This was like in the last week.
Okay, in the last week. Okay. I would like to see some official. And I don't know when this is all going to be implemented. I know over a period of time.
It's going to be over a period of years.
Yes.
It's not going to be any time soon.
Right. So we have time to learn. I mean, I'm just giving myself a crash course because that's what I chose to do. But
We're not going to have to panic tomorrow or anything like that. Braille readers, take heart. It'll be a fairly gradual transition.
Yeah, and it sounds like the vast majority of it you'll be able to get from context. I mean, some words may look strange because, like Jamie said, tablet. You know, I'm picturing how odd that will look.
Well, it reminds me, and I expect we won't have problems like this. I wonder if the UK is going to adopt it too, because UK English Braille is readable by North Americans, but it's different because they don't have capitals and their contraction rules are slightly different. They, for example, they take, it's like take the first contraction you can take, and they're not respecters of syllable boundaries. For example, they're like the word professor, P-R-O-F sign, E-S-S-O-R, yes. Professor. Or yeah. Or mm-hmm. one that threw me. I kept seeing this word in this book I was reading, F.5E.
I knew that was what you were going to say.
Yes.
I knew it.
Yeah, no, I think I brought it up. Yeah, Fever? Oh, it took me like, I saw it 5 or 6 times before I finally mm-hmm. got it.
Yeah, and me too.
Yeah.
Tune in next week for this episode of When Braille Strikes Back.
Ooh, I like it.
Messes with your mind.
I like it.
It does.
Or even I've seen letters from the UK and they'll write D E A sign R.
Right. Well and if you
it just
if you
looks
read
wrong.
Well it does, but if you read it's funny because if you read books pressed before I believe 1959, you'll see that.
You'll
see
US.
Things like in the U.S., yeah. Yeah. You'll yes. see things yeah. like E-A sign, D-E-A sign R, C-L-E-A sign R.
Yeah, you're right.
They abbreviated things differently.
So Braille has evolved over the years. I think that's a good point to make. It's not like it's been the same since Louis Braille died and then all of a sudden it's
right.
changed.
I don't think Louis Braille really, actually invented the contractions.
Well,
I think somebody else did
no,
that.
No, I think you're absolutely right. Right. So,
in fact, Louis Braille, of course, being French... yeah. Didn't have a W. So, like, W breaks the whole pattern.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't actually realize this until I was 10 or 11 and reading a book about Louis Braille, and it talked about it, and I'm looking at it, and I'm going, oh, that's true. So, like, the letters K through T are A through J with dot 3 added. U, V, X, Y, Z are A through E with dots 3, 6 added. So, because there's no W, like, W breaks the whole thing.
Yeah, W just out there by itself, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was very ingenious. You know?
Yeah. We may try to talk to someone on this podcast, or I don't know, we might even make an interesting Serospectives at some point to talk about UEB and what's happening and where is it going and when's it going to go there and how did the decision get made and all that fun stuff. That might be something for us to investigate a little bit. WindowEyes 8.0 Beta 2 is now available. They've done more improvements on the web. Of course, the big thing with them is the overhaul of browse mode, and that's a pretty big deal for WindowEyes. So check it out if you're a WindowEyes user or if you think you might like to be, and you can have a look at that. Coming up after the break, the mailbag and roundabout right here on Serotalk Podcast 132.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit, make a plan, be informed today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Serotalk Podcast, and it's time for a light mailbag this week. I think people had election stuff on their minds is what I think. So it's kind of floating in. The mailbag is floating down from the ceiling, and let me see if I can reach up and catch it here and kind of bring it back down to earth. Kind of like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory when they drank the
fizzy lifting drinks.
There you go. Thank
you.
Yeah. All right. Well, this week we have an email from Russ Keene, and he was asking if there was any place that we knew of to hear a good demonstration of the Nexus 7, maybe a podcast.
Funny he should ask that.
Yes, isn't that interesting? Coming up very shortly in probably the next That Android Show episode, Ricky and Joe, I know for sure, are going to sit down and talk about the Nexus 7. Now, it may not be a review from start to finish where you, you know, everything from unboxing to how to use it, but it should at least give you some good tips. As far as I know, there's not one of those, and I'm kind of tongue-in-cheek when I say this, but one of those three-hour-long podcasts where you get to hear every minute detail of the product. But, you know, stick around, because as people begin to use them more and more, I'm sure that will happen at some point. But you can definitely learn more on that Android show.
We also got an iReport from Mary Ellen, and unfortunately there was a significant amount of breakup, so we're not able to share it with you. But she called in to talk about note takers and to express the concern that when something goes wrong, there is not a way for a sighted person to help and set that situation to rights.
That's a very interesting point, although there is one little caveat that Patrick, our producer, experienced, and we'll let him insert his comment here.
Well, I think that's only partially true. It really just goes down to the fact that it's something specialized, and people who don't necessarily know the product trying to help could quite easily make things worse, regardless of if that person is blind or sighted. For example, I deal a lot with audio equipment, and sometimes I have issues reading displays, and I'll get someone to come in and read the display for me, and the person helping me might not have a clue how to actually interpret the stuff on the display, and the person might be presenting it in such a way that it doesn't make sense to me, and that creates its own set of issues. Also, when I was in high school, I had a Braille and Speak, and one of the buttons broke, and rather than sending it to Blazy, my shop teacher looked at it and said, "Hey, I can fix that," and, well, what do you know, he did. And he did it in such a way that when the unit was actually sent to Blazy, they had no idea that anything had ever been done to it by anyone that wasn't one of their authorized service technicians. So there you go, just something to think about.
So thank you, Mary Ellen, Russ, and everyone else who wrote in. You know, we do collect a lot of these. Sometimes we aren't able to use them all on podcasts, but, you know, we do these things called feedback specials from time to time where we just feature you, the listener. So stick around, because one of those is liable to pop up in the not-too-distant future. So keep listening. Love your comments. Resources at saratalk.com. Go to the blog and leave comments. We do use blog comments as well. Go to iTunes and rate the podcast while you're over there. Write a review of it. If you have an Android device or an iOS device, then leave the ubiquitous iReport or call the Blab line 866-997-2522. It's time now for Roundabout.
Roundabout.
Well, this week, it's all about walking and using, I keep wanting to call it, say, bionic legs, because that's these headlines use this term sometimes. Obviously, that's just to kind of get you to pay attention to the headline, but certainly electronic or prosthetic limbs.
Robotic.
Electronically assisted prosthetics.
Robotic is the word I was looking for. That's why we keep Lisa around, because she does that. Trust me, when we do marketing things and we write, I never do anything but what I don't, run it through her first and run it by her first and have her, she usually has some really excellent substantive comments to make.
And the three laws of robotics are?
Yes. So the first article is a gentleman who, this is a real short little article, mostly just a reader comment. He climbed 103 floors of the Willis Tower in Chicago. After his paralysis, he actually had some surgery that he did or had done and restored his ability to walk. And then we have a blind man who is wearing a robotic suit. He went blind at age 23, or age 22 actually. And he went to the South Pole on foot as a blind person at age 33. Well, that's pretty impressive in itself.
Also very cold.
Yeah, definitely. So in 2010, he sleepwalked out a window.
Ooh.
Okay. Ow. Yeah. Wow.
Mm. Now that is what you call a rude awakening.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yes. Paralyzed below the ribs and... But he got this robotic suit. It's a backpack. It has a little computer in the backpack and legs that wrap around his legs so that when he thinks about operating his legs, this computer is able to do that for him. He now takes 200, or has taken 2,500 steps a day, and is planning a trip to Siberia. There's so much being done in this area, in the area of robotic limbs.
I can't help but wondering, first of all, when I saw a previous version of this article, the headline was something like, man falls out a window and then uses, you know, prosthetic legs. And mm-hmm. I thought, there's got to be more to that story, because how does someone just fall out the window?
Right.
But I'm wondering if these legs have any GPS or any kind of time sensors in them, so that if it's the middle of the night, they won't operate.
Yeah.
You know,
that would
no
be
more windows for you, buddy.
Right.
Well, I don't know. I guess
if he takes off the suit, then I guess
that would
to
then
sleepwalk, he would have to
walk through windows.
Yeah, he'd have to sort of, he sort of had to have to put the thing on in his sleep and turn it on. And yeah, that'd be interesting. Although I'm a little concerned if he's planning to go to Siberia, concerned about the batteries.
Mm. Yeah, I wonder what...
Well, that's what you have rolling luggage for, the battery.
Yeah. Kind of wondering what the TSA people at the airport do when he comes through.
It's like that joke about... That's like that joke about the guy with the talking watch.
Mm-hmm. That it does everything.
Yeah. And he says, I want to buy it. And he says, okay, well, I'll sell it to you for $1,000. He takes the watch off. Yeah, yeah. You forgot the batteries. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It'll be a battery like that.
Mm. It saddens me that Christopher Reeve couldn't have lived longer, because I have to wonder. Of course, I realize his paralysis was a lot more involved. So, but I mean, I think he was starting to. I mean, he did so much work.
He was starting to move a little.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Amazing.
It is indeed. Well, I'd like to thank you both for joining me on this week's podcast. One of the things for sure is that you really don't know who's going to show up from week to week. You kind of have a basic idea who the cast of characters is going to be, but we have managed to create several different configurations over the last several weeks, and that's going to continue. We like to keep you guessing. As we mentioned last week, we have a lot of things coming up. One of the things that Joe didn't mention was some holiday review content that we're going to be presenting to you in the next few weeks. So definitely the podcasts over the holidays are not going to be all the typical news stories and things. We've got some fun content just around the corner. I'd like to thank everyone for listening. At the end of the show, as usual, Patrick's going to tell you how to get a hold of us. Until next time, have a great week, everybody.
See you next time.
Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Seratalk. Visit us at www.seratalk.com. Send us an email at resources@seratalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.